Hey ho, Ramones fans, and welcome to Pinhead Pod. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. This episode's guest is former Ramones roadie and tech Mark Morales. That interview's coming up in just a bit. Remember, this show is available on all the major podcast platforms and all over social media, so be sure to look us up and follow us everywhere. All right, I don't have any news related to the Ramones for September, but here are some historical dates for the band. September 1st, 1992, Mondo Bizarro was released. It was released on Radioactive Records. It was their first album on the label after leaving Sire. It was recorded at the Magic Shop and Baby Monster Studios in New York, produced by Ed Stasium, and it was the first album to feature CJ Ramone on bass. The album peaked at 190 on the Billboard 200. September 15th, 1987, Halfway to Sanity was released. It was released on Sire Records, recorded at Intergalactic Studios in New York, produced by Daniel Ray. It was the last album to feature Richie Ramone on drums. The album peaked at 172 on the Billboard 200. September 15th, 2004, Johnny Ramone passed away. He passed away in his home in Los Angeles after a long battle with prostate cancer. September 15th, 2005, the Ramones Museum in Berlin opened. It is still open today. It has moved locations a couple times, but it is still open in Berlin. September 18th, 1951, Dee Dee Ramone was born. He was born Douglas Glenn Calvin in Fort Lee, Virginia. He was from a military family and moved often, and he lived in Berlin, Germany until he and his mother and sister moved to Queens, New York when he was 15. Dee Dee passed away on June 5th, 2002. On September 22nd, 1978, Road to Ruin was released. It was released on Sire Records, recorded at Media Sound Studios in New York, produced by Ed Stasium and Tommy Ramone. This was the first album to feature Marky Ramone on drums. The album peaked at 103 on the Billboard 200. September 28, 2004, the DVD Ramones Raw was released. It was mostly comprised of home video footage from Marky Ramone, but also contained concert footage from Rome, Italy in 1980, plus other clips and commentary. And September 30th, 1989 was CJ Ramone's first show with the band. It was held at Lancaster University Students' Union in Lancaster, England. And of course, CJ was replacing Dee Dee Ramone on bass, who had left the band. All right, there's all the historical dates for the band for September. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we will have this episode's guest, Mark Morales. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, in Screams. And welcome back to the Pinhead Pod. This time I'm being joined by a former crew member for the Ramones, as well as a man that played Pinhead on stage many times, Mark Morales. Mark, how are you?
Good. I was known as Mongo.
Mongo. That was the question I want to ask you. How'd you get that nickname? How'd you get the nickname Mongo?
I was the Cramps' first roadie, and I worked for them for 4 years. By Mark Dark then. I ended up in rehab where I met Dee Dee Ramone. After I got cleaned up, he gave me a job with the Ramones. Most people aren't aware of the rivalry between the Ramones and the Cramps. They had a big feud. It wasn't, these rock and roll feuds weren't real battles. They were just grievances against other bands. Why we don't like them? Why we don't like them? And everybody had an attitude.
Yeah.
The Ramones and the Cramps both did a version of Surfing Bird.
Okay.
A lot of bands covered a lot of old rock and roll songs.
Yep.
Because they're great songs. Sure. It wasn't a matter of the Ramones seeing the Cramps do it and going, we could do that better, or the Cramps doing a, you know, it was a simultaneous, both bands recorded the same song.
Yep.
A lot of bands did Do You Love Me? And that they didn't bother each other, but the, you know, the Ramones did it, Johnny Thunders did it, The Heartbreak, oh, you know. So they both recorded Surfing Bird, and they both accused each other of ripping the other band off.
Of course. And,
which wasn't the case, but it set the grounds for the hype, the media thing. There's this ongoing battle between the Ramones and Cramps.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the Cramps doing shows with the Ramones. They just toured two different circuits, two different fan bases.
Yeah.
But when I met Dee Dee, I got cleaned up. He gave me a job with the Ramones. John didn't like people knowing that a Cramps roadie was now a Ramones roadie. So they wanted a name change. I lived in Taiwan for a while. And my legal Chinese name, because I worked there, is Meng Huai Der, which basically means big, strong, like horse. So when Dee Dee gave me the job, he wanted to use my Chinese name.
Okay.
There was a rule with the Ramones. You can drink and you can smoke pot all you want, but if you get caught and something goes wrong with your responsibilities,
yeah,
there's a $50 fine.
okay.
So I could drink beer at lunch. And if Richie knocked a cymbal over because he hit it hard on the side, I got docked $50 pay because I had a beer at lunch. So I was a pothead. Dee Dee was a pothead. We used to hide to smoke our joints. Matt was a pothead too, Matt Lolia. So we were
Yeah,
always
little Matt.
Yeah. Oh, he's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
We were always hiding to smoke our weed so that John wouldn't catch us and fine us $50. So it went from Mong to where did Mong go? Where did Mong
Oh,
go? Where did Mong
gotcha.
go? Where did Mong go? It became Mongo.
Gotcha. All right. But it all originated from John not
John
wanting to a
mentioned
Cramps roadie.
and the Cramps. And
Oh, man.
John's nickname was Der Fuhrer behind his back.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He, well, somebody had to keep us in line.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
we were having fun. That was all. It was all about having fun. And sometimes our fun got a little overboard. I caused a lot of nightmares for Monty Melnick.
well, and you told me that Monty didn't like you. Is that why?
You know, he doesn't like to think about me because I gave him so many headaches. Here's one for you. When you're on the road for 18 months, you don't get 18 months of tour dates. You get 3 months, 90 days. Three or four months. You go where the record's selling to
Sure.
promote it.
Yeah.
The tours would go one way and then they'd go another way and another way and bouncing all across the continent based on where the record needed to be promoted and pushed or where there was some huge event that demanded the Ramones be there. So at the end of one booklet of tour dates with the directions and hotels, all that, the itinerary. We stayed in Holiday Inns.
All right. It's the bathroom story, right?
That's later. I'll tell you that one later. We always stayed in Holiday Inns and we always had identical rooms. The reason for that is that when you woke up at 5 in the morning to go pee, you knew where the bathroom was. You didn't need to turn the lights on. You could stumble your way because the rooms are all identical, even the paintings on the wall.
Yeah.
So as we neared the end of the first itinerary, or the second, I don't remember. We neared the end of that stretch of shows. And we're waiting for the next couple months to arrive. Well, at Holiday Inn, they have a toll-free number for reservations. So Matt and I smoked a lot of dope one night and we called Holiday Inn and we made reservations in Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Uzbekistan, Egypt, like all the Arabic countries in the Middle East, and kept it a secret. And we went for breakfast because we had our meetings at breakfast in the Holiday Inns because they have Denny's. And Monty loved his grandson and breakfast. So we would go and have breakfast every day. That was our meeting. And we went knowing that the hotel, we get left Monty's number, room number for confirmation.
Oh,
Got confirmations from calls from all the Holiday Inns asking about the reservations for 12 people in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Iran, in Iraq. They're at war at that time.
yeah.
But when we went there, Monty had this really, really worried look. He's looking at us going, how am I going to get these guys there and bring them back alive? Like
Yeah.
they do things that are you get executed for.
Yeah.
And there's this, now I worked for other bands
Yeah.
and knew how the management end of it works. I was Kid Creole and the Coconuts' first roadie, and Tommy Mottola was our manager. He managed Hall & Oates as well as, so I knew that the booking agent had not sent us the itinerary, and I knew that Monty's first reaction when he got the confirmation calls would be to call Gary Kerpers, the manager, going, what are you doing sending us to Iraq? And Gary Kerpers, he's busy managing the Talking Heads and the B-52s and all kinds of other bands, so he doesn't know what the booking agent does. So he had to tell Monty, I don't know, let's talk to the booking agent. Go to anywhere. It took 2 or 3 days before Monty realized he'd been pranked. And there were 2 or 3 mornings where Monty was so stressed he couldn't eat his breakfast. He's just sitting there looking at the plate and looking at us, and me and Matt are trying not to giggle because we know what's going through his mind. We're all gonna die. This is where we're gonna die. And then we went down one morning, and Monty had figured it all out because his face, he was, I'd never seen him angrier, but he didn't know which of the 10 of us did it. You know, he's with his breakfast, giving us all the evil eye. And this is the first time I've ever talked about this publicly. If Monty sees that, he'll know that I'm pretty figured out, right? But he'll
Problem.
know that it was me that made the calls. That's one of the reasons he's not really, he likes me. He just doesn't like to think about me. Walt and I were from Brooklyn. The Sound and Light Company, Jam Sound, was from Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio. That was Tim Daly, John Markovich, Eric Fortunato, and they had a couple other guys that came and went. But there's a rivalry between the Brooklyn guys and the Youngstown, Ohio guys. And when you're the new guy on a crew, people tend to want to bust your balls. And the Ohio guys went out of their way to bother me. And they weren't aware of the fact that I worked as a bouncer when I wasn't touring. Worked at the Whiskey A Go Go and kicked the holy crap out of Nikki Sixx in front of eight of his friends. And they didn't think it was mean because I was vicious. And that's why Dee Dee liked the Mongo nickname, because it refers to Mongolian warriors, barbaric savages, vicious fighters. I loved to fight when I was in my early 20s. Well, I didn't want to fight the Ohio guys. But they were teasing me and mocking me, and I told them that that had to stop. And they just laughed at me. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I said, you don't want to know. The day we played across the street from the Alamo at this huge club was the day I lost my temper with the Ohio guys. There were five of them there that day, and I beat them all up. I didn't bruise anybody. I didn't break any arms. I didn't give them black eyes. I know how to hit people without leaving a mark. And I would grab one, throw him against the wall, start slapping him. When the other guy came to save him, I'd throw him to the ground and chase the other guys around. The club manager didn't want to let his bouncers get involved. he didn't want his bouncers fighting a band road crew. So he called
Yeah.
Monty up at the hotel and said, one of your roadies has gone crazy and he's beating the other guys up. And Monty said, is it Mongo? And the guy's like, how did you know? Monty's like, well, they kind of had it coming. They're asked for it.
Yeah.
Let him, don't interfere. Mongo will stop when his arm gets tired. So for about half an hour, I entertained myself by chasing these Ohio guys around the club and bitch slapping them. And I didn't hurt anybody. We had to establish who was the top dog. And
Sure.
it didn't matter to me how long you've been working with any band. If I'm the new guy, you have to give me respect because I worked for other bands. This isn't like a new thing to me.
Yeah, right.
I worked for the Cramps. I worked for Suicide. I worked for the Dead Boys. I worked for Johnny Thunders. I worked for Kid Creole and the Coconuts. I worked for bands nobody ever heard of. I worked for management companies and was continually touring.
Yeah.
If I wasn't touring, I worked in a bar and beat people up because
Yeah.
that's a tradition.
Well, you talked about, right? You bounce at the Whiskey. How did you
Yeah.
wind up bouncing in LA at the Whiskey?
Well,
Just the connection on the tour, or?
the Cramps went to LA. They moved to LA, and I
Okay.
moved out there with them. But
Okay.
they only go out on the road for 2 weeks at a time. 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
So during the 2 weeks off, I had to fend for myself. A lot of rock bars would hire roadies from bands.
Yeah.
Because they knew, one, we were only going to be there until the tour went back on the road. And it gave them a kind of cool to say, we've got a Motley Crue roadie. We've got a one of these roadies. We got this guy. You know, it gave them a connection to the rock and roll industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just a bar that sells beer and has bands. So I had a couple bars on the East Coast and the West Coast that when I got into town, I would tell the manager I was available and they'd call me on nights when they needed me. I used to work at Irving Plaza, Club 57.
Well, and you mentioned Nikki Sixx, right? Obviously from Motley Crue.
That was a great place.
Yeah. You mentioned Nikki Sixx from Motley
Yeah,
Crue.
you want to hear that thing?
Yeah, when you
Yeah.
that incident, was that while he was in Crue? Because he has a little bit of a punk background, is that right?
No, he's a poser, a fake, a pony, a fraud.
All right.
The dressing room at the Whiskey A Go Go is at the end of a long hall. The hall is about 6 feet wide. The UK Slits, they're an English all-girl punk band,
Yep, sure.
finished their show and they went in the dressing room and they said, don't let anybody in. We're going to be changing our clothes. We'll meet all our friends in 10, 15 minutes. We'll let you know when you can open the door.
Okay.
Every band asks for that.
Sure.
They want to have an argument. They want to kiss. They want to scream at each other. They just want to have a beer. They want to put dry clothes on.
Sure.
They want to look presentable for the media and all that. So I've got this long hallway with about 45 people who are all waiting patiently. Because they said you can't go in right now. The girls are changing. They just give them 5 minutes and they'll meet everybody. Don't worry about it. Then I see this gang come walking down the hall. Nikki Sixx is big. He's a tall guy. He's like 6'3", 6'4". And I'm looking at them and they're all in black leather, Harley gear. It looked like a biker gang. They're all wearing biker boots and jackets and vests and they've got patches. And I'm like, oh God, this is going to be a problem. He walks up to me and goes, we're here to see the girls. And I said, yeah, well, you're just going to have to wait like till they're ready. He goes, don't you know who I am? I said, I don't really care. He goes, my name is Nikki Sixx. I play in Motley Crue. We own Hollywood and I go where I want. Now, there's a rule at the Whiskey A Go Go. If you touched a bouncer in the 80s, just to put your hand on the shoulder and go, hey, buddy, what's happening? You're not allowed to touch the staff there. If you patted me on the back, I am required to punch you to the ground. You're not allowed to be on your feet. I have to knock you off your feet.
Yeah.
And Nikki Sixx had played at Motley Crue. Nikki Sixx and Motley Crue were a house band at the Whiskey.
Yeah.
They played there all the time.
Yeah.
And when he put his hands on me and pushed me out of the way, there were two thoughts that went through my mind. He's got mascara and black fingernail polish. He's not a badass biker. And the second thought was, if I don't do something, I'm going to lose my job.
Yeah.
So I grabbed him by his vest and slammed him from one wall to the other, so his head was conking off the wall. And then I bitch slapped him. And I said, you motherfucking asshole. If you were in the dressing room and told me not to let anybody through, and I let somebody through, you would have me fired. I know assholes like you. You would have my job.
Yep.
And if you push your way through this door, I'm going to lose my job. You play here. You know the rules here. If you pinch the waitress's ass, you get your arm broken there.
Yep.
Like, it was a hardcore place. We had Marines, bikers, rockers, punks, and assorted weirdos. And
Yeah.
we had to keep it in line. People had to behave.
Yeah.
And so I slapped him around for about 10 minutes because I was bored waiting for hoping the girls would open the door so I could stop slapping this poor long-haired poser. Finally, I got tired of slapping him, and I didn't, again, didn't, no fist, no broken nose, no black eyes. That always comes back to haunt you. I just bitch slapped him and screamed at him and yelled at him and mocked him. And I kept one eye on his gang, and not one of them, with all their Harley gear and biker boots, had the balls to come and say, please stop. Not even, like, they were afraid of me. And the 8 or 9 or 10 of them could have beaten me to a bloody pulp there, and they
Yeah.
didn't. And when Nikki Sixx went to crawl away, literally on his hands and knees, I couldn't resist it. And I planted my size 10 steel-toed boot solidly on his tailbone to see him do a frog hop and land on his face. When you kick someone in the tailbone, they can't walk. Your legs go numb.
Yeah.
And his friends had to pick him up and carry him out of there. They didn't come back later. So Didi liked this side of me.
Yeah.
Monty didn't.
Well, you mentioned, right, meeting Dee Dee in rehab. Is that what led to you working with the Ramones?
Yeah.
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 So
I went in. The
Dee
drugs
Dee brought
got
you
out of,
on.
yeah. The drugs got out of control. And one day, you want to know what made me actually go? I used to get high with Johnny Thunders, and we were adding strychnine to our heroin to increase the down effect. It's like a roller coaster. You mix
Yeah.
heroin and cocaine. You go up, 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 and then down. But if you add a little strychnine to the mix, the downward plummet is the same feeling as a roller coaster going like huge down.
Yeah, that rush.
And then after about a week of that, I was like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I'm shooting up rat poison. I gotta stop. I don't know how to stop. I'll go to that rehab place I walk by every day. It's called the Odyssey House on 6th Street in the Lower East Side. They saved my life. And I met Dee Dee, and we got along really well.
Yeah.
And Dee Dee felt pity for me. And he and his wife, Vera, more or less adopted me as an errant child, and Dee Dee made sure that I was eating, that I wasn't doing drugs. He'd come down to visit me, make sure I wasn't getting high. We were allowed to smoke marijuana. Our therapist was like, smoke till your face turns green. Don't do chemicals. Like,
Yeah,
that's all they cared about.
Sure.
And after I'd gotten cleaned up, Dee Dee asked me if I wanted to work for the Ramones.
Yeah.
And they had just fired Marky Ramone and replaced him with Richie.
With Richie,
I knew Marky Ramone because I used to be a roadie for Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Richard was my neighbor on 10th Street. We lived in the same building, And he and I, we used to go cop heroin at 4 o'clock in the morning in the jungle, Alphabet City. And two guys have a better chance of getting in, scoring, and getting out alive than one guy does. And I used to work for the Voidoids, and I worked for television when Marky was in television.
Yeah.
And Mark and I don't talk. When he got fired from the Ramones, his life fell apart. And there were a couple people in Brooklyn that fed him, made sure he had beer, made sure he had weed, made sure he was okay. When he got cleaned up and got back together with the Ramones, because he had to be off alcohol, off all drugs, which is great, I ran into him and I asked him if he heard any word about our friends, our mutual friends. And he was like, I have nothing to do with people like that in my life anymore. And it's like, Mark, they kept you alive for 3 years. You don't know anything.
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't even, you can't even tell me if they're alive or not. And he's like, I don't care. And it's like, that's kind of cold blooded.
Yeah.
That's just wrong. So last time I saw Mark was the last time the Ramones with Mark, Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee playing. It was in Toronto. And they blessed my son, Jake. Jake is formerly the last Ramone.
Oh, okay.
They stood in a circle around him and put their hands on his head and said, we dub thee the last Ramone, because they knew they were finished.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was the only guy to have a son. Everybody else had daughters. There isn't another band I worked for that was ever as exciting as the Ramones. And I worked for the Cro-Mags. I worked for all kinds of bands. And it was just, the Ramones had a special magic that nobody else had.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned like damn near every major player in the New York punk scene. But tell me, we're back to Dee Dee, right? You know, you met him in rehab.
What I
he
consider
helped.
Touring is leaving New York.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, just going back to Dee Dee, right? You said he helped you out. You met him in rehab. But not only that, you know, got you a job. But not only that, but he wrote a song about you, right? Endless Vacation.
Yeah.
Off of Too Tough to Die.
Yeah. And that song horrified me.
Yeah, it's
when I saw how he saw me when I first entered rehab, because I was that angry guy.
Yeah.
First I was mad. It's like, what an ugly song to write about your best friend.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait a minute, this is like an accurate portrait of me at the time. And it made me look at myself and change myself.
Yeah.
He helped me grow up.
I mean,
he looked after me. He gave me advice. He was, I could call him at 3:34 or 5 in the morning when I wanted to get high. And he'd get up, get out of the house, come down to wherever I was, take me out for breakfast, or we'd go to a pinball arcade and play pinball until the urge went away.
Yeah.
And
Which
he
is a
was
wild,
always,
it's a wild
always
thing,
there for
right?
me.
Because a lot of people don't see that side of Dee Dee, right?
No.
They only think it's this wild ass punk guy who had his own issues. But he, what he learned through his issues, Dee Dee helped others.
Yeah. Dee Dee was kind to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
He was always nice. He was always there. You could always go to him with a problem. He always backed us up. If I did something wrong, Dee Dee wouldn't let other people yell at me. He'd yell at me later.
Yeah.
But he always stood up for me.
Yeah.
And on his last book, Murder at the Chelsea Hotel, the last paragraph describes his suicide. And when I read it, I knew that Dee Dee was going to kill himself. I knew that he was in L.A. His wife, Barbara, was great. He sent her to the store and overdosed. Deliberately OD'd. And the reason for that was his life was a roller coaster. He'd be sober for a while, and he'd create great songs. He was writing books. He was painting. He was selling paintings.
Yeah.
And the week that he killed himself, he had a published book released, an independent album put out, and an art show. And he decided this is a good time to kill myself. I'm at the top of my game. Because if he OD'd when he was in the gutter, they'd say, see, what a useless junkie, he was a loser. So he couldn't kill himself at the bottom when he wanted to. He had to do it when he was at the top.
Yeah.
At the top of the world. Vera was a saint. She put up with Didi's nonsense for years and years and years. And then he got back into drugs and he wouldn't quit. And she finally had to divorce him, thinking that that would wake him up and
yeah.
turn him around, that he would get his life together to get back with her. And he didn't. He destroyed his life to spite her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that wasn't why his life fell apart, but
sure.
On top of everything else, his anchor was gone.
Yeah. I mean, addiction is such a crazy thing, right? You can't predict it. You can't predict what it's going to do, how people are going to react. It's just,
and
it's
when she
crazy, man. What a disease.
When she brought him the divorce papers, they said what every divorce paper says, I get everything. And then you take them to your lawyer, and he says, you get nothing, we get everything. And then they haggle, and it's split 50-50. He saw the papers, and he signed them without a lawyer reading them.
Yeah.
He gave her all the royalties to everything and ended up with nothing.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. He was playing in local little bars, putting together bands with different people who were thrilled to play with him. He made a living playing. And then CDs saved his life because they released the entire Ramones catalog, was re-released on CDs. And Vera didn't get any of that because they didn't exist at the time of the divorce.
Sure.
So those royalties brought Didi up. He didn't have to. He was no longer worried about hand-to-mouth living. He was cool.
Yeah.
And he could afford to jet around and be a rock star again.
Yeah. So tell us, during the Subterranean Jungle Tour, you played Pinhead a lot off those stages. How did that happen? I mean, how did you get, I mean, what was the deal?
The first night on the road, 10 minutes before the show, Didi takes me aside and says, oh, I forgot to tell you, you have to be the Pinhead. And I was like, what? I'm a professional roadie. I've spent my life wearing black, hiding in the shadows. You don't see me on stages. There's no very few photos of me.
Yeah.
And because a professional, they're not there to see me. They're there to see the band.
Sure.
Nobody should ever see the roadie. We should be like invisible shadows in the back, fixing things, making sure things fall apart. I said I wasn't going to do it. I never wanted to be on a stage. I'm not a performer. I love rock and roll. I love music. I love the shows, but I don't want to be on a stage.
Yeah.
And Didi said, well, you kind of have to do it. And I said, why? And he said, because it's your job. And I said, no, I was hired as a drum roadie. And he said, yeah. And then John chipped in and chirped in and said, the drum roadie job pays for your hotel and food, but if you want cash, you have to be the Pinhead. And I was like, what? He said, if you don't wear the mask and do the Pinhead dance, you can't, you're not getting paid. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
If you don't like that, go home now. I'll buy you a bus ticket to go home. And I was like, this can't be that bad. The mask, the original Pinhead mask at that point was 15 years old.
Yeah.
Rubber that's been worn every night and you're sweating in 15 years stinks. It stinks and it's slimy.
Yeah.
And I had to put the mask on and go out and do the little Pinhead dance. Gabba gabba, hey, gabba. I had to bring the sign out and then do a little dance behind Joey.
Yeah.
He said, please, please don't make me do this. I'm not comfortable on a stage. All those people are looking at me. I don't want people to get Matt. You don't know Matt's the guitar tech. You have to do it. It's the drummer of his job.
Yeah.
The second night, I went out. I was so nervous. I'm on stage. I don't remember where it was. I walk out with the sign, Gabba Gabba Hey. Joey turned around. I handed him the sign, and Joey had just had foot surgery, and I stepped on his foot.
Oh, no.
Foot in my combat boots. Crushed it.
Oh.
Joey had a weird cancer. His bones were still growing. When I first met him, he was 6'8". When he died, he was 7'2". The bones didn't grow evenly, so periodically they had to shave his toes and knuckles and bones so that they would work, because they didn't grow normally. He had weird, like, you know, a lot of health issues. And I stepped on the foot that had just had surgery and saw the look on his face, and he turned around with the sign and sang the song. I couldn't stop him. After the show, he's like, "Man, watch my feet. Don't step on my feet, please. It really, really hurt." He didn't yell at me or scream. He was like, "Just don't do it again."
Yeah.
This is so embarrassing. The second night I went out, I was watching his feet so carefully. I stabbed him in the eye with the sign. It had a wooden crossbar. The wood went behind his glasses and cut his eyelid. I could have blinded him.
Oh, no.
And I didn't even know I gashed his eye because I was so worried about stepping on his feet. After the show, Joey takes his glasses off, and sure enough, there's a cut on his eyelid.
Yeah.
He's like, "Mom, don't stab me in the face with the sign. You don't watch my head. Don't hit me with the sign. Don't hit me with the sign." And I'm like, "Okay, okay." The third night I go out, and I'm so scared about hitting him in the head with the sign. Dad, I stepped on his foot again.
No! Oh, yeah. No!
So at the end, there was a meeting, and everyone yells at each other about their mistakes and this and that. And John thought it was hilarious. Three nights in a row, I hurt Joey. He thought that was
cool. Of course
he
did. Of course.
And Joey was like, "Right, you know, you got my feet and my head. What you're going to do tomorrow night, you're going to come out with the sign. And you stop 4 feet behind me, and you pretend you're a goddamn statue. You don't move, you don't breathe, you don't blink. You just stand still, and I will take the sign from you. And when I'm 4 feet away from you, then you do your dance." The reason you have photos of my face in that mask, we were in Los Angeles, and the truck got stolen from a Holiday Inn security parking lot. And the mask and the sign were gone. Everything was gone. The whole truck was gone. Matt always brought John's two guitars to the hotel room. That was John's part of Matt's job, that the guitars came to the room. So when they stole the truck, Matt had two guitars, two Mozarts. And the next day, we went to a music store and bought everything, cash, a whole new set of Marshalls, basses, drums, everything. We went to the show, and then Monty goes, "Hey, you got to make a mask." And I'm like, "How am I supposed to make a mask?" He goes, "I don't care. That's your problem." And I went to a costume shop, and that pinhead mask is actually a cone head. Remember the cone heads?
Yeah. Saturday Night Live.
We got a cone head cone. I punched a hole in it and stuffed a wig through it.
Oh, man.
So we had something close to a pinhead mask.
Yeah.
And I wore that, I don't know, for about a week. The truck was found empty, except for the Gabba Gabba Hay sign and the pinhead mask. They were sitting in the truck. There was nothing that. And if those guys, the thieves, if they'd known where the Ramones would end up, that mask would have been worth $500,000.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's crazy. Well, hey, speaking of that kind of stuff.
So it came back and I had to wear it again.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, do you have any kind of memorabilia, keepsakes or whatever from your time with the Ramones? Anything that, it doesn't have to be anything major, but anything that you hold dear to you?
I have a hat Dee Dee gave me from his Dee Dee King days.
The rap days.
And it's
Man, what was he thinking?
what he was thinking was he didn't want to be labeled as a one trick pony.
Okay, yeah.
And
So he went to the other extreme.
do you want to hear the story behind D.D. King?
Yeah, tell me.
Not many people know this.
Okay.
D.D. and Vera lived in Queens.
Okay.
There was a kid that lived next door to them who wanted to be a rapper. But his parents were like, no, you're going to go to school to be an engineer. And he was friends with D.D. And
Okay.
D.D. said, engineering school is always going to be there. If you want to be on a stage, you got to do it now. You got to defy your parents and do it.
Yeah.
You got to be a rebel. But if you don't do this, you're going to go through the rest of your life wishing you had. It doesn't matter if you're successful or not. This is what you want to do. You got to do it.
Okay.
Well, the kid wrote his first hit. His name's LL Cool J.
There you go. Okay.
And the song went huge. He made $1 million off his first song. He said to Didi, what can I do for you? You encouraged me, and now I'm like top 10 rappers. My dream came true because you told me to follow it. And Didi goes, well, why don't you teach me how to rap? So LL Cool J taught Didi how to rap.
Yeah.
When Didi recorded that album, if you listen to it carefully, it's drums, guitar, keyboards.
Okay.
There's no turntable. There's no scratching. The scratching is Didi running his pick up and down the neck of his guitar. He didn't want to do black rap because he's not black. So he incorporated doo-wop and other rock things. He got Debbie Harry to sing with him, the half American, half German, because she's German. And he did a rock and roll rap album. And all the Ramones fans hated it. All the rap fans hated it. You know who loved it?
Who? Hello, Golden.
DMC. They shouted out a tribute to him on one of their songs. They're like, this is the
Really?
coolest guy, is D.D. King. Yeah. They refer,
Yeah.
like, they give him a shout out on their album.
Well, Run DMC's for Queens also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't know the Ramones or D.D. They just admired the fact that a white guy was rapping without sounding like a black guy. And
Yeah.
not trying to spew like Vanilla Ice.
Yeah.
You know, Vanilla Ice? He got a record contract because he's a victim of a drive-by shooting. And it turns out it wasn't a drive-by shooting. The neighbor shot him in the ass with a BB gun when he was. And the whole point of the Ramones was to be a white rock and roll band with no soul or funk influences. They wanted to be like the Beach Boys, which are distinctly Caucasian. It's not that they had a problem with black music or anything like that. They just thought that if they played funk or something like that, they'd be fake because that's not what's in their heart. And that's where the Ramones sound came from. And they wanted to be authentic, and they were. So when Dee Dee did his
Absolutely.
Dee Dee King thing, it had to be authentic. It couldn't be, he couldn't be Eminem.
Sure. Yeah.
Eminem does a great job, but that's like Elvis. Elvis is a white guy who got rich playing black people's music.
Yep,
And
absolutely.
there's nothing wrong with that. But Dee Dee and John and Joey and Tommy wanted to remain true to themselves.
Yeah.
And they
So,
did.
man, Mark, we could, I mean, I think we could talk forever. Let's
Yeah.
wind this down. And we'll have to have you back, man. I can tell more stories because this has been
Have
fascinating.
you seen
What are
One
you
Room?
up to? What are you up to now? And what's going on in your life now?
So I work at Metalworks. It's a sound and light company owned by Triumph,
Yeah.
a Canadian metal band from the 70s.
Okay.
I don't like their music, but I like the job and the guys. It's a bunch of crusty old rock and rollers. I worked with several different sound and light companies and was always getting in trouble with human resource or did the wrong thing or threatened to break somebody's arm because he, whatever, it was bad. So when I got to work at Metalworks, it's a bunch of old guys with gray hair and tattoos. And in the warehouse, we yell and scream and curse at each other and have lunch together and laugh. And we don't have any problems because if we have a problem, we just scream it out. We vent it. You can't do that in a lot of other places.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, rock and roll was for people who couldn't hack a job at a 7-Eleven.
Okay.
And now the whole rock and roll industry is an industry. They have schools to teach people to be roadies and to academies and this and that. And it's like the sanctuary for social misfits that rock and roll was is gone.
Yeah,
I like to
absolutely.
joke that punk rockers had a cultural revolution. We were against everything. We wanted everything to be different and new. And we were successful with our revolution, extremely successful. Society uses punk songs to sell Jaguars and the punk fashions, the black leather miniskirt, the fishnet stocking, blue hair. You see old ladies walking around with blue hair and people like no one looks twice, rainbow colored, nothing. But punk rock is where the colored hair dyes came from. And I like to say that society wanted everything punk rock had to offer except the punks.
Which is why we got New Wave, right? So what do you listen to now, Mark? You still listen to punk?
Yeah. I'm not the angry young man I used to be. I like to listen to reggae and blues and all kinds of music. And I don't really listen to thrash. And I'm 65. I don't want to hear, hey, 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 kill, 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 kill. I've heard it for 40 years, you know? So I like checking out new bands. There's a band I love right now called Night Chills.
Night
And
shift.
they
Okay.
play a theremin. They have a.
Oh yeah.
It's an instrument that was used for science
Star
fiction
Trek.
movies.
Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah. They use it as an instrument, and they're very very crampy, very rockabilly, but rockabilly mixed with thrash. It's kind of unusual. I just stumbled upon them and up here, and I love them. And I'll go see shows. I won't go. I will not pay $200 to see anybody.
Sure.
When the Ramones toured, there was an unspoken policy between bands. A ticket to a concert. I saw the Stones. It was the Stones, Prince, George Thorogood, and two other huge bands for $20.
Yeah.
And the philosophy was a ticket to a show should not, doesn't matter who's playing, Led Zeppelin or the Who or the Stones, a ticket could not be more than 4 hours pay at minimum wage. And that was so the kid that worked at Burger King could afford a ticket.
Not anymore.
No, you can't. It's just like everything else, it's now only for the rich.
Absolutely.
I work for NASCO and Gig Guys, and we do big arena shows, and like Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar. And I work part time. It's not full time work. I work a day here, a show there.
Yeah.
And the tickets at the arenas, you're lucky if you could find a ticket for $200 in the nosebleeds.
Yeah,
and then
I know.
Tickets, the promoters sell tickets for $4,000 to be on the floor at the front half of the arena floor. And their attitude is, well, if we didn't sell them for $4,000, somebody would buy them for $50 and sell them for $4,000. So we're just cutting the ticket scalpers out. No, you're the ticket scalpers, you know? And, God help the bother who has four kids that want to go see
can't do it.
T-shirts. We used to give t-shirts away to promote the bands. Now a tour shirt at the gig is $75.
Yeah.
You can
I
order
think
it online for 30, but if you're buying it at the show, it's 75.
it's high time for punk to rise up again and kick the industry in the ass again.
Well,
Something needs to shake it up. It's nuts.
what I hate to say it, rap music did for a while. It's
Sure.
like we gotta be different.
Yep.
We're bands that don't even play instruments. But then
Yep.
it became commercialized and exploited and big corporate business. I'm thought that COVID was going to spawn a generation of music.
Yeah.
That the 2 years of lockdown would put a bunch of teenagers with nothing else to do but to try and invent a new musical style.
Yep.
And there is some interesting stuff. Have you ever heard of The Who?
The
H-U. The Who.
who? No.
Mongolian from Mongolia. Biker metal.
Mongolian biker
Imagine
medical.
Motorhead meets Genghis Khan.
I didn't ask. Yeah, I wanted to ask you actually
And
about
Jacob
Motorhead.
Roach.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I wanted to ask you about Motorhead actually, because you said you worked at
Oh,
Whiskey. Did you ever cross paths with Motorhead?
I worked at a lot of Motorhead shows. I used to work for Suicide. Alan Vega and Lemmy and Ozzy were friends. And
Yeah.
Alan would take me to drink with Ozzy and Lemmy. There's a bar in New York called the Washington Arms, and it's a hotel. It's not a rock club. It's like an old man's gentleman's lounge where the pipe smoking and that with the big armchair. And that's where they would drink because they wouldn't run into any other fans.
Yeah.
And they could just quietly have a beer. And I would drink with Lemmy, but what do you say to someone like that? You know, hey, how's
Yeah.
it going? Good, great. You want a beer? No, I got one. Okay. And then we just drink, the same as Ozzy.
Yeah.
Ozzy did come into the Washington Arms one day wearing Sharon's clothes. She
Yeah.
was mad about how much he was drinking, so she hid all his clothes. And when she went out, he just stole her clothes and came down. And when Ozzy walked in, he didn't look like he was a drag queen or anything. It was just Ozzy coming in for a beer.
Aussie.
Just
Yeah.
nobody thought anything of it. He was cursing his wife because she hid his clothes.
Yeah.
And
I
he goes,
love
well,
Lemmy. Lemmy's a hero of mine.
I've got my slippers. I've got my slippers. Yeah. And we're like, why didn't you come in your pajamas? And he goes, well, that wouldn't have been appropriate for the bar.
That's
And both
great.
those guys were real, they were gentlemen.
Yeah.
They were polite. They were kind. They always had a moment for their fans. They were never, you didn't want to be on either one's bad side, but they weren't the villains that people thought they were,
No. Rock and roll to their core, right? I mean, they are up there, right? Well, Mark, again, let's wrap this up. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for talking. We'll have to have you on again because I think we could talk for hours
I'd
upon
be
hours of
happy
more
to.
stories.
I'd be happy to. I could tell you some good cramp stories. I
I'd
don't
love
know
that.
if the podcast is just for Ramon stories. I got a million I haven't told you,
Yeah.
including nearly being murdered in New Orleans on a boat, on the riverboat.
With the Ramones?
The boat
Wait.
crew tried to, the boat crew tried to kill me.
Okay, let's.
Not
Oh
because I
man, we.
was with the Ramones, it was just because I was a Yankee.
Right, you can't drop that. Tell us the story. We'll close on this story, right?
We played on a riverboat in New Orleans, sailing up and down the Mississippi. And
Okay.
gear loaded in. You have to push it up this ramp into the boat. A
Yeah.
New Orleans riverboat is like 4 stories high. It's
Yeah.
got a grand ballroom. So we got all the gear in, we got everything set up for sound check, and the boat's still sitting at the dock because we're gonna wait for the fans to come.
Sure.
And I'm up on the upper deck smoking a joint, hiding, and two boat crew guys come by and they go, hey, we heard you Yankees don't know how to swim. And it's like, I went to high school in Los Angeles, I was a surfer. I was like, well, I can kind of swim. And they're like, we don't believe it. And I'm like, yeah, I can swim. And they're like, I'll bet you $100 that you can't dive over the side of this boat, swim 30 feet, and bring back a handful of mud. And I was like, 30 feet? I can do that. Like from four stories high, you're gonna, you know. So I pulled out $100 and he pulled out $100 and we gave him to the third guy to hold. And he was either going to give the crew guy 200 bucks because I didn't bring up mud, or he was going to give me 200 if I brought it up. I stripped down to my boxers and I was climbing the railing to dive overboard when the captain came by and he said, what the hell you think you're doing? And I said, I'm going to make the easiest $100 I've ever made in my life. He goes, how do you plan to do that? I said, I've just got to dive overboard, bring back a handful of mud. And he goes, let me show you something stupid. I remember him saying that. Let me show you something stupid. All along the walls were the empty cases of booze, like the empties, because it was a bar, a floating bar. And he took an empty quart vodka bottle and he it had a lid and he said, what's going to happen when I throw this overboard into the water? I said, it's going to bob back up like a cork. And he goes, you'd think, wouldn't you? And I'm like, yeah. He throws it over and the vodka bottle didn't come up. And I'm looking there and I go, well, where is it? And he goes, well, stupid, you are at the foot of the mighty Mississippi. This river starts at Niagara Falls and it's coming down here. When you look at the surface of the water, it's glass, it's calm. 5 feet down is a current that goes out to the Gulf of Mexico. And he said, the current sucked that bottle into it and it'll speed it up, I don't know, a couple miles out in the Gulf of Mexico, maybe three or four. If you can hold your breath that long, go ahead, but I don't think you can. And I was like, wow. And he starts yelling at the guys, he goes, I told you to stop doing this. Now give him back his money and get to your jobs. And then he sent me to the, I had to stay in the kitchen for the duration of the cruise, where I was taught to make shrimp gumbo by a old black cook in the kitchen because he's like, what are you doing there? It dawned on me that when he said, I told you to quit doing this, I realized that when I was on that top railing, I wanted to make $100. And if they said, don't do it, don't do it, I would have thought they didn't want to lose the $100. And I would have said, fuck you, you owe me $100, and dived. And my body would have probably never been found. And all that would have been left of me were my boots, jeans, and t-shirt on the deck, which they probably would have pitched overboard and laughed. Because the north-south thing is still a problem there with some people. But
Man.
yeah.
And had you known, we wouldn't be talking today, Mark.
No, I wouldn't have a million stories to tell.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man. Well, thank you again for coming on, giving me this hour plus. We'll have you back on again and we'll tell
I've
more.
been happy for you, Dave.
Man, this is it's just great to listen to you tell stories, and we'll have you back on, tell some more stories.
I'll be
And
happy to.
absolutely. So thank you, Mark. Thank you for your time.
Send me the link to your podcast so I could check that out.
Will do.
Because
Absolutely.
I don't need it. Not so much to see myself talking about myself, but to see the other stories you've got
I
from other
will.
people.
What do you listen on? Do you use like YouTube, Spotify? Do you have anything in particular?
YouTube.
YouTube. Okay. Yeah, I'll send you the YouTube link, and your episode will be out September 1st. And
Oh, cool.
yeah, so just a few days. So
Well, I'd like to see all your podcasts to see what you're doing. Just
yeah, cool.
honestly, that's the kind of stuff I like to pay attention to these days.
We've had Matt on. Matt, little Matt was on. I talked
Yeah.
to him. So but yeah, I'll send you that link, and like I said, you'll be out September 1st. But yeah, thanks for talking, man. It's been a blast, and like I said, we'll have you on again and do it again.
Next time I'll tell you a good Matt story.
Ooh, okay. That'll be good. That'll be good. So,
We got
all
away
right.
with murder. Matt and I got away with murders.
Well, we'll save that for next time.
Recipe. It's if you can't be good, don't be caught.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you, Mark, and stay in touch. Like I said, we'll talk again in the future.
Definitely, Dave.
All right. Thank you, sir.
I'll send you some Night Chill stuff that you might find interesting.
Do that. Yeah, I'd like to hear them. Yeah, I'd like to check it out.
They're kids, and they give me hope for the future of rock and roll because
Oh.
they just have. I'm so sad to see punk rock bands today. Punk
Yeah.
rock was. It's like rockabilly bands. Elvis and Sid died the same year. You don't see people walking around with the Elvis look and the wrestling belt and the mutton chop. You don't see that anymore.
Nope.
Punk rock was about being different and original. And the worst thing you could say to a punk band was, "You sound like the Jam."
Yep.
You sound like the that was a curse for a band to sound like anybody else. And I like the fact that kids are listening to punk rock bands and love them. But they shouldn't be copying them. They should learn the lesson of be original, be different. Even if you
Yeah.
suck, if you're different, you're great. I
That's
worked for the Beastie Boys before they were the Beastie Boys.
back in the punk days.
They were called Even Worse. The reason they
That's
were
right.
even worse was they couldn't play any other instruments. Nobody could. But what made them even worse was every song they rotated. So the
That's right.
drummer play drums, then attempted to play guitar and then sing and then bass and then back on the.
Always loved the Beastie Boys. Always.
And they were terrible, but they were a lot of fun. Yeah, and they evolved into the Beastie Boys by being different, you know?
Yeah, that's my biggest problem nowadays. Like everything I listen to sounds the same. It just, I can't tell one band from the next, and it's like, I don't know. I need a little. I mean, I love. It's like I love the Ramones, man. And
Do
I
you know
love.
the difference?
What's that?
Bush Tetras.
No, oh, did you? No, did you worry for them?
Yeah, but check
Yeah.
out Bush Tetras.
Okay.
They're like from the same neighborhood and the same generation, but they don't sound anything like the Ramones.
Yeah,
They're
that's what I
the
meant. That's what I love, like back in punk band. It's just back then, it's like every band was different, right? They had their unique sound, man. I mean, it's
if
like,
you didn't have your own identity, nobody was interested.
yeah, and it's, I hate when it's all, I don't know, it's hard because like, I love, all right, I love the Ramones, I love Black Flag, I love the Dead Kennedys and everything, and they're all so different. And it's like, now it's like when you hear punk, it's like everything's just hardcore, sounds exactly the same. And I don't have any problem with hardcore. But it just, everything sounds the same. And it's just, I'm like, man, I don't know,
You
I need
know
someone to,
the
who's that?
Cro-Mags?
Yeah, oh yeah, I love the Cro-Mags, yeah.
I known Harley since he was 12 and was a drummer in the Stimulators.
Ah, oh, what a
And
badass.
yeah, he's still touring. But the
I got it.
Cro-Mags don't sound like other bands. They have
No, 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 no. I love them. And I gotta check out. I always got that documentary thing out now. That whatever. And I want to see that. But I love the Cro-Mags. That's one thing, man. I'll listen to anything, but I just want it to be unique, and I want it to sound different, and not. I don't want. I don't know. It all blurs together so much anymore. It's hard to distinguish what's
Well,
what, and
I blame that on the industry.
it is. Yeah, I mean, something gets popular, they jump on it.
If your band sells a million copies, we want 10 bands that sound just like that to sell another 10 million. And it's like, no, come on. Where's
I know
the
it.
artistry, the creativity? It's like been. What I think is going to happen is that there'll be an independent network of bands are making their own records now. Independent. The independent movement is slowly starting and slowly growing. And it won't be long before there's networks back and forth across the continent of like-minded individuals that tour without wanting to rely on Live Nation and that.
I mean, it's with the
It's
internet, it's easier than ever, right? To
cool. You can see an independent movement growing. It just hasn't gelled yet.
Hey, Bruiser buddies, I want you to listen to Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Every week, he has the roughest and toughest interviews in the podcast world today with the best guests you could ask for. There's no bums on this show. Let Dave Dynasty be your podcasting tag team partner and listen to Wrestling Nostalgia while drinking beer, smoking cigars, and busting heads. Just look it up on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today, because the Bruiser said so.
All right, and thank you to Mark for coming on and doing that interview with me. So many great stories, so many more great stories to tell. So like I said, we will have him back on in the future to hear some more. Our next episode will be available October 1st. The guest will be announced soon on social media. So like I said earlier, make sure you follow us. We're on pretty much all the platforms. Just search for Pinhead Pod. While you're there, make sure you share our post and help the podcast audience grow. You can also give us feedback, suggestions, tell us your Ramones stories, share your Ramones pictures, etc., etc., etc. on those platforms. We like the interaction. We like the discussion. So make sure you just do that, right? Just interact with us. Comment, like, share. And while you're out there, also be sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. We're on all of them. And while you're there, please leave a rating and review if applicable. That helps us on the algorithms on those platforms. All right, that's it for this episode, guys. Thank you once again for joining me. And until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and gabba, gabba, hey.